Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast, episode 183. Myself, Rick Shields, and co-host Guy.
Yes.
Did you have a nice holiday, pal?
I did indeed.
Nice. Yes. You look chilled and relaxed today.
Looks for me deceiving.
You're stressed out.
No, so we had a podcast out this week, didn't we? Was recorded with Dan Greaves, which we're going to come on to later on, because your short game is nothing short of decent now. So, no, it's actually quite good. We're going to come on to that in more depth afterwards.
Yeah, I think he's a miracle worker.
Quite literally.
Magician.
You owe him a lot of money for how much he's fixed you.
I think we sold quite a lot of books for him.
Potentially.
So I think it's fair game.
Potentially, yes. It's a good book. I've not read it yet. I've looked at the pictures, though. But I was there in real life, and I've watched the video, so...
Well, I actually had the lesson off Dan, and now I've read the book.
You've not?
Yeah.
In a week?
I'm about... When I say read it, I've genuinely... actually read it. It's by the side of my bed, and I reckon I've done at least 80% of the book.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm up to like pitching next.
I thought you said the pictures, because that's the best bit. Wow, that's
I'm
good.
Up to pitching. So it's helped me kind of solidify what I learned on the day. But yeah, hopefully you enjoyed last week's episode. Thank you for sticking with us with the sound. I know there was a few little issues. We recorded it outside.
Yes.
Which was my call. That was definitely my call.
It was.
But when we're on site, to be honest, it was probably the best place.
I think if we were only doing audio, there were some rooms at Woburn that would have been fine. But then we want to do visual as well.
Correct.
You want a room that looks nice, and Woburn naturally want to give us a room that they're kind of proud of as well. And to get the two hand in hand was quite difficult. So it was outside.
And it was a busy day. There was lots going on. So yeah. I think the audio still worked really well. But yeah, Dan... fantastic session, but we want to kind of dive into a few things. First off, thank you for everybody for their messages of concern.
Yes.
Like, genuinely, I know I got a lot, and I know you got a few as well. Like, people literally saying, are you okay?
Well, we'll hold our hands up. It was our fault. We were planning, so last week I was off. The week before that, we had a filming week, which we're going to come on to down. We're working in London, but more like the Watford area. We played at some amazing golf courses. The plan was that week was to do a podcast, me and you, chilling, maybe have a couple of beers and do a late night podcast that might have got a bit X-rated. That sounds a bit weird, actually. Not X-rated. What's the word?
18 and over.
Yeah, still a bit weird. Might have swore occasionally, potentially, and had a beer or something.
A bit risque.
That sounds a bit more weird again. a bit raunchy.
We were going to drink and do a podcast.
We just drank instead. Yeah.
We forgot to press record.
Yeah. So anyway, we didn't have a podcast that week. We did say one was coming, so people were like, where's the podcast? Then there was no Break 75 because we had it kind of 80% ready and it wasn't quite where we wanted it to be. So we delayed that a week, thankfully, and it came out really well. I think it did anyway. SNA, which we'll come on to, was an awesome venue.
I think, to be honest, probably something we've learned. I think over the time of doing YouTube, it's been 11 years now, celebrated 11 years last week, is... sometimes, like now, because it's such a beast, and you know, on the main channel, we've uploaded like 2,500 videos. You know, people really see that content as their weekly viewing experience.
Correct.
And you know, we have to treat it like that now. And to be honest, we'll hold our hands up. We should have communicated it better.
Correct.
To you, the audience. We you deserve that.
Correct. However, unless you actually just. Yes, but even then, if you put someone on Twitter, a lot of people who watch videos don't use Twitter. If you put someone on Instagram, a lot of people... unless it's an actual video saying there's no videos coming, which kind of defeats the object, people wouldn't see it anyway. But yeah, thankfully, we have got so many videos filmed. Yeah. Arguably too many, I would say. I'm stressed at how many we've got.
It's good. We're in a good position. We've done something new, and we landed last week or 2 weeks now at the Grove.
Drove, but that's it. You. We pulled up.
I got a helicopter.
Of course.
We based ourselves at the Grove, and from there we filmed several Break 75s at different places: the Grove, Woburn, Sunningdale Heath, Ashridge. We also filmed the lesson with Dan and did a podcast with Dan. And it's the first week we've done like a block week filming like that for an awful long time. And it was good. There was lots of positives out of it. So be rest assured, there's plenty of content in the bank.
Yes.
Being churned out by the lads at the moment, edited. So for the foreseeable future, and we endeavour to do this for the rest of the year, there will be 2 videos a week.
Yes, and a podcast, and this review channel that people have heard a lot about. And there's rumours. It's almost like an old wives' tale. You heard about Rick Shields' review channel? Oh, that never existed. It's coming. It's getting closer by the day. The studio, which is about 3 doors down from where we are right now, I'm going to say it. It's the best indoor golf studio, full stop, period, end.
Agreed.
We've also got a new member of staff who's joined the team to head up that channel. He's going to do all the editing, all the production. It's exciting.
Yeah. Our mission for that review channel is we're going to drop a main tour of the review channel studio on the main channel.
Yes.
So we're going to show you everything that's in the new review studio, which I'm really excited about. And then we endeavour to drop the first review on that channel by the end of May.
Yes.
So thank you already for everyone that subscribed.
Yes.
Is it up to like 60,000 now?
It's something like that.
So thank you everybody that subscribed. Our mission is to hit 100,000 within the first month of the channel being uploaded.
Be nice.
Let's get a nice silver plaque in there. And then, like I say, every single week, there's going to be brand new golf equipment reviews going on that channel. It is, believe me, I know we teased this pre-Christmas, and we went a bit premature in the teasing of it, but we didn't realise how much went into it. It is going to blow your socks off when you see it. And a bit like everything we do here at Rick Shields, we want to make it the best experience ever. So it's close. It's very, very close.
You're right, though. We just got too excited about it and spoke about it far too soon, which is very much like us.
I don't think we really put a plan in place before we set up the channel.
No.
In fact, we didn't
put a plan. We got carried away, set up a channel, and it's all right, we've got to do this now. But it's going to be exciting. And I think, we've got some ideas as well about what the content's going to live on there. It's going to be loads. If you are a Rick Shields hardcore fan, there's a few out there, I believe, you can, joking, there's hopefully a lot out there, you can subscribe to the main channel and get your big hitters, your Break 75s, your great coaching videos, your playing
against
tour pro.
Tour pros.
You've then got the podcast where you get to hear about Rick and his daily life, his banter, his pulling up to the Grove in the chopper.
Not quite, but yeah. Something about my chopper.
Yeah, it's pathetic, isn't
anyway.
It? And then we've got the review channel.
Yes.
So there's lots of different channels, and you can subscribe to 3, 2, or 1, or none.
Or all.
Or all. That's 3. They're a bit rusty, but it's okay. Things are good.
And then in the world of actual professional golf, it was fantastic to see Jason Day won.
He did indeed.
He's been trending incredibly this year.
Well, when he went off the face of the earth, what was that? And this isn't a trick question, I actually don't know. What was going wrong with his game? A bit of everything, or was it?
So when he reached world number one
in
January 2017, he could do no wrong. He was definitely, without question, the best golfer in the world. Mm-hmm. And I suppose to some degree, I wonder how that affects you mentally, you know, reaching that kind of peak.
In what sense?
Because you've reached the top of the mountain. For him, his number one goal growing up of playing as a kid might have been to win a major and become number one in the world. And he achieved that.
Mm.
And it's almost then trying to reset your targets and your goals. And I think a lot of people listening can probably learn a little bit from this or sympathise with this. When you do reach a certain goal, afterwards you do get a bit of like a, almost like a goal hangover, don't you?
Is that how you felt getting a million subscribers? Or
yeah, because you're desperately trying to get to a certain target and a goal. And when you hit it, you have that honeymoon period of like, wow, this is the best thing ever. I've worked so hard for this. And then it's like, what's next? Mm. And in fact, there is actually a book out there, and I've read it. I've started reading it. It's called The Second Summit.
Okay.
And it's all about that idea that there was a business guy, and I think he might have actually worked for Nike, and he basically reached the summit of his business career. And then from that, he was like, well, what do I do next? And he actually kind of came up with a second plan of attack, a different business idea to kind of create this second summit. I suppose for someone like a Jason Day, I'm not saying that this is it, but it might have been the fact he reached such heights and it was like, what's next? You know, some people might have ambitions of 10 majors and becoming number one for 10 years, but others might have just got to that goal and then not been able to reset those goals.
Yeah, very true.
And that might be like trying to break a certain score. Like if you go out and try and break 100, once you finally shoot in the 90s, it's like, right, I've got to reset those goals.
Well, that's almost to its very definition of why golf is so addictive, because you might take this game up and your first objective might be, I literally want to just play 18 holes and keep a score. That might be your first goal. You do that and you shoot 133. Yeah. It's like, right, breaking 100 is the next goal.
The next goal might even just be to make a bogey.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a par.
And you do these things and you break. I remember we did a video with John Robbins, who's been on the channel many times, been on the podcast 3 times, I believe. I remember him saying, what was it? It was something along the lines of he'd be happy when he could break 90, I think he said to us. And I was like, John, that's a great achievement, but you won't be happy. He's like, oh, I will. And inevitably, he shoots an 87, and next thing it's, I want to break 85, I want to break 80. Golfers, you never really, and maybe that's the case. If world number one is such a pinnacle moment, if you do hit that, maybe it is a case of what next? Or maybe it's the pressure of everyone chasing you. Yeah. Maybe that's too much.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You've got a target on your back then, haven't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
Everybody wants to hunt you down, and that's what makes Tiger's dominance so extraordinary, because like, everybody wanted to beat him and he could still hold everybody off.
That drove him on, didn't it?
It did.
There'll be some people, and again, this might not be Jason Day, but there'll be some people you'd imagine who get to that spot and almost can't handle it. Like when people throw away the lead.
Yeah. I think another thing as well from memory, didn't he go through quite a big transformation with his body and his strength and his physique?
I can't really remember.
I'm sure he started chasing a bit of distance.
He did get better shape when he went to Nike. Yeah. I remember from the Adidas stuff.
And he kind of started to get a little bit more ripped and started to work on that to try and, again, that might have been his way to try and elevate his game. Because you actually see it quite a lot when, and we spoke about this with actually Tommy Fleetwood in the podcast, when you turn professional and you end up becoming on tour, you feel like you almost have to change things. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember Tommy saying he kind of broke away from his coach that he'd been working with for all those years and felt like then you need a new coach or a new caddy or a new equipment deal or whatever it may be. James Robinson, our friend, talked about it. When you get onto tour, you feel like, you know, there's so much temptation. You feel like you've got to do things differently. And I suppose that could again be the reason why maybe Jason Day, when he reached world number one, kind of like started to look at, well, what do I need to do differently?
You know what's mad? I'm just looking here on the World Golf Ranking. In September, he was 182nd in the world, I believe. He's now back up to 20.
His game has really been trending, similar to how Ricky Fowler's game's been trending. I feel like both those two players have done so incredible over their careers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Ricky not quite winning out on a major just yet, but I'm sure, you know, there's still time for him to do so. Both kind of lost forms, but both, they're too talented not to make it back. You know, and it's nice to see that they're actually starting to, you know, make back. And Jason Day winning, I always think his pitching and his chipping is just
insane,
extraordinary.
I think it's good when you obviously get guys who go out onto tour and they prove themselves, whether that's by winning countless events, winning majors, or becoming world number one. I feel like once you've reached those heights, it sounds obvious, but you deserve to be up there a lot, don't you? And the fact that he's now kind of come back and is a serious contender and may well contend this year for the majors. I think it's good. He feels like a proper golfer. I don't know how I'm determined proper golfer. It's a bit of a loose
definition.
He's
been there, done that, got the t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, to see him doing well is, for me, I like that.
Do you think, there's lots of individual sports, but it's one of the characteristics of individual sports. Your form is so outrageously important. Like you could be, let's say a footballer, for example, a lot of football players stay on the team through merit, don't they?
Not, you have a bad 3 or 4 games, you're still
not particularly on form, really. Where golf, it's so based on form. And if you just fall out of that and it's a snowball effect, once you start, you know, going downhill with your golf, it snowballs and gets much, much worse.
Yeah. I think that's, if you were a footballer and you were, I mean, let's just say Haaland now for Man City, if he went 10 games in a row without scoring, he's probably still going to be in the team, isn't he?
Of course he is.
But in golf, if you miss 10 cuts in a row, it's quite different, isn't it?
And the other thing with Haaland, let's say he doesn't score for 10 games, and then on his 11th game he scores, mm-hmm. picks that confidence back up, and then next time he's... Where golf, it feels like if you're a tour pro and you miss 10 cuts in a row, you're probably likely going to miss the 11th, the 12th. Mm. It just gets worse, and then you're losing your card
and all sorts. Do you think, though, there's almost... In golf, sounds like there's more things to go wrong.
Of course there is.
Like, you could be hitting it really well, but your putting's terrible, you can't hold a putt. You could be the opposite. You could be putting very well, but just can't hit the shots you want to hit. You could be mentally.
You might be having an injury or...
Like, if you were... I mean, it's hard to compare, but if you were a footballer, a striker, and the ball comes at you and it's in an open net, you could miss it. But it's almost so quick, you don't have time to panic about it. But in golf, if you've got a half-decent round going and you suddenly start thinking, oh, that next hole's a tough hole, and there's water there, and oh, isn't it going that water left, but then it's out of bounds right. Like, your head can go. You've got so much time for your head to go. It's hard. It's intense.
Very, very easy to overthink in golf, isn't it?
I don't get how these guys do it for 4 days in a row competitively, then jump on a plane to wherever, then have a practice round pretty much, then go into it again the following week. I know they don't do it every single week, the top guys, but they do have weeks where it's three or four events in a row. Must be hard.
It must be incredibly mentally draining.
Yeah.
On a flip side, Liv was event this week. DJ won it in the playoff, I believe. And like, it feels like there's a lot of Liv events happening in a quite a close window at the moment.
I think there's been, wasn't there one last week?
So there was obviously Orlando, wasn't that long ago. Then they went to Adelaide. And then after Adelaide, they went to Singapore. And then it's back in Tulsa now. Like, it feels like four events in a really short window.
There's one May 26th, and then there's Valderrama the month after, then London one. I think I'm going to go to London and have a look at it. I went last year to see what it was like. And as I said then on the podcast, although I wasn't blown away by Liv and I'm still kind of on the fence, which we talk about every week almost, the event itself was great. And I think a year on, with what all the learnings and, you know, infrastructure they can build from last time, I think it's going to be a good event to go to. Would you ever go to one? I don't feel like you'll come to this one if I go.
No, I probably won't. Only because, again, I don't... At the moment, because it's still very hot topic or controversial, I feel like me going, whether I'm going for research purposes or whether I'm going as almost a cynic, it'll be seen as I'm going as a fan and I'm supporting it. And I feel like then a lot of people be like, oh, he's bloody Liv. I seem to be getting accused of being either very Liv biased or very against Liv, or very PGA biased or very against PGA Tour. Like, I feel like the audience, from when I see comments, like, are either accusing me of being very, very pro Liv or very, very pro PGA Tour. I can't kind of work it out.
I think you should go, because you need to go. You're going to go because we might go to British Masters, the Belfry. You're not suddenly pro DP World Tour. I think we'd do a good podcast. I think we should go. Say now, I'm going to go as neutrals, and we'll have a day.
I'll shave my beard.
Shave your beard. Wear some big glasses. Like that Peter Griffin sketch, where it's not actually Peter Griffin. Everyone's like, oh, that's Rick Shields. Like, no, it's not.
It's just someone looks like
Mark Jones. I think we should go. I could drive us. You could source if you wanted to. Oh, no, you can't source at Liv. You'll be running on top off, running round. Go, you crushers! Crushers for life! Come back to the crushers. I'd love you to get a Liv tattoo. Imagine I get bladded and end up in London, Liv tattoo.
Oh, my God.
Go, crushers.
Well, like I say, the team picker pick for me is not a team I can support.
I would like to hear your take on it. As a journalist, going as a fan. Because journalists that go, because that who's the guy, Alan Shipnuck, that got kicked out one of the events? He goes as a journalist, and doesn't mean he's a fan. He's going literally as a journalist. I think we should go, and you actually get a feel. If you can go, right, I'm going to see what it's like. I'm going to embrace it. If I like it, I'll say I like it. If I don't, I'll say I don't.
Okay. You sold me.
Right, good. That's Liv paid me a fortune for this.
They're like, you need to get Rick at an event.
That's how easily you can be twisted. I think we should go and try it.
I do want to. And like I say, hopefully, you know, we can talk about it on the podcast for the right reasons. You know, I want to go as part. I do want to see it and experience
it. Well, that's it, because you can go for it. You can go and you could come back and say, you know what? The event as an event was insane, right? You could love it. But you could also say, but I don't agree where the money's coming from. I don't massively care who won. Like, you can have different angles. You could come back and say, I love everything about it. You might come back and say, actually, the golf, standard golf was brilliant, but the event bored me. I don't know.
The one thing I'm very, very interested to know, I've been to a lot of golf tournaments, and I could describe the audience at a golf tournament.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I've been to some of the biggest, well, the biggest ones in the world. The Masters, the Open, the Ryder Cup, and I know what the audience is like. They're all slightly different at each event,
yep.
But there's obviously somewhat of a trend. I'd be interested to see what the audience is like at LIV.
Yeah.
I know you experienced it last year, but that was the very, very first event. I am intrigued to know.
I've thought, while I was speaking, I am listening to you, but I've also thought the best title ever for this podcast, which we won't probably use, but I'm just thinking, Rick Shields goes to LIV. How good of a title that would be.
Let's save that for when I actually go.
Okay. No, but let's do it. Let's see what it's like. And then I think we are debating going to British Masters as well.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Is that similar time
frame? That's soonish, I think. Would it be quite interesting to see the difference in events? And then obviously they're going to be the Open.
Yes.
Which I'm very much, very, very much excited for. It's on our doorstep.
Do you feel... I feel weird about the Open this year.
Talk to me.
I don't know if just last year it was so hyped up. I feel like this year you can't even get close to that hype for the Open.
You're right.
Like, I feel like last year it was so, like, the build-up of it all, like, St. Andrews, 150th, Tiger, all this jazz, like,
yeah.
It felt really big, and I feel a bit, like, that's not built, it's hard to replicate each and every year.
I think you're right. I think when you had any Open at the old course feels different because it's the old course. It's going to feel different. It has that feeling of history, and it's where golf was invented. With it being the 150th and the Open and the R&A did a very good job of pumping out that message, you know, this is where it all began and all this kind of stuff. Inevitably, that Open felt 10 times bigger than anyone I've ever been to before.
Felt really elevated.
Absolutely. The fact that we also went working in St. Andrews about 10 times that year, I think also to us, every time we'd go, there'd be a bit more infrastructure, a bit more of a buzz. It was getting closer and closer and closer. I think sadly, I suppose, off the back of that, what kind of goes up must come down, so to speak. It's not like the Masters where you can almost build it every year to some degree, because the Masters can, in theory, get better every single year. The Open can't. When the Open's not at the old course, it can't be as good as the ones at the old, in my opinion. That doesn't mean the actual event itself can't be. You can have some very exciting ones and great winners, but I think the pre-tournament build-up is always most exciting at the old course. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, well, yeah. More so last year than I've ever known before.
I suppose the one before that was 2015. I wasn't doing this job. You were kind of doing you, but you probably still weren't thinking of it maybe the same.
I also think the Open in that five-year window has changed a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big event. I remember back in, like, 2015, you could just rock up on the door and still buy tickets on the day. Yeah,
not the case
now. It's sold. Portrush changed
it. Didn't they have to ballot Portrush because of the infrastructure?
Royal Portrush changed the Open. In a way that it's just magnified the eyeballs on it, I believe. Mm-hmm. Like, it's made it more of, like, people, you know, there's a ballot now 12 months earlier. You've got to apply for tickets, you know. To some degree, it's a little bit of a shame it's not as open.
I have mixed feelings on it.
Because, again, it used to be, you know, if it was a nice Sunday, if a nice Thursday and you wanted to go and, you know, you want a fan of golf, wanted to take little Jimmy who's never been to a golf event, you could almost guarantee you walk up to the door and you buy a ticket. Mm. You can't do that anymore. Like, you have to plan these things a little bit more in advance.
It's a tough one because in one sense, I agree. I do agree with you. It was a shame that people can't just turn up on the day and experience the Open. But it also is a good thing that golf's now got such a fan base where it sells out and it can't be over capacity and they have to put restrictions on the numbers and they have to do it advanced. It's a good thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. And people like yourself maybe to blame for that in a good way, that you're making golf more accessible and cooler and more people are following it. Therefore, it is selling out quicker.
Yeah, since Portrush, it's really, really changed. It's become... and there's not a bad way again, it's become a commercial monster. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really grown arms and legs and it's attracting a much, much bigger audience now of people, like you say, live wanting to go and watch.
The Open, obviously I've never been to the Masters yet, but the Open, the experience, I think is brilliant. I would always, I know it's quite expensive. I think a few of my mates have got tickets this year, actually. They decided to go. They've been put off before about the price of it. I think it's 75, 80 quid a ticket now, which is a lot of money. But if you want to, you can literally go from 6 in the morning till, what, 9 at night. Yeah. In terms of value for money, it's actually quite good, although it is expensive, if that kind of makes sense. But it's something I would always urge, if you're able to and you're in the area or you can afford to go to an Open. It's incredible.
What do you think at the moment, with all of these kind of LIV players resigning from DP World Tour? Like, it seems like it feels like a real end of the bum.
DP World Tour will suffer, 100%.
I feel, yeah. Like, DP World Tour at the moment, I don't really know what's happening with it.
No.
I'm not finding myself watching it. I don't know where they've been or what they're doing. Like, this weekend? Was it? I kind of want to say Poland, but am I wrong in that?
It was. Viv, is that Sweden? I don't know.
It feels like it's really lost its way.
I must admit, I've not been massively keeping my eye. Belgium, it looks like it was. Is that right?
Yeah, Belgium, that was it. That was it. That's right.
Well, think about it. The weeks where you will watch the DP World Tour is the weeks when you've got your Rorys, your John Rahms, etc. playing, which essentially is a watered-down PGA Tour event, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not really anything standalone that's different. So to be fair, if we use the LIV example again, they've pumped a load of money in it to try and get some of the best players in the world, which they've kind of done to a degree. And at least they've tried to make the format different in the sense of the shotgun start and the three rounds. It's not that massively innovative, is it? But it's a bit different. The DP World Tour is obviously four rounds of stroke play, some great golf course, admittedly. But I suppose as well, when you're watching the PGA Tour and somebody wins an event, i.e. Jason Day, so in theory, he is the best golfer on the planet that week, isn't he, ultimately?
Yep.
I know you've got LIV now, but ultimately... Sounds bad, and no disrespect, because someone who's won on the PGA, on the DP World Tour is amazing at golf, clearly. But it's almost like the level down, isn't it? It's kind of like, I'm not as
feels
excited.
Like a real stepping stone at the moment.
Well, it is, isn't it?
I'm just looking through the schedule, you know, and realistically, the next big event is actually the early July, which is the British Masters.
Right.
And then it's got the Genesis Open, which is a Rolex event.
Is the British Masters actually that much of a bigger one? Is it just the fact that we think it is because it's the British Masters?
You're probably right. Yeah, you know it's probably... I
mean? They have some decent players there, but I don't know.
I can't.
It's not a Rolex series, is it?
No.
Scottish Open's a good one.
Scottish Open's great. You know, normally, because it's the week before the Open, you actually get some of the huge names from the PGA Tour playing in it as well.
You've got BMW.
The BMW at Wentworth is big. How many actual Rolex series are there now?
Only five.
Yeah, I worry. I do. I don't know what they're going to do because it feels like, you know, because they've built such a strong alliance now with the PGA Tour. If the PGA Tour says we're not including LIV, they've got to follow suit.
Well, yeah.
And obviously the LIV players that have resigned. I mean, they are real. You know, standout names for DP World Tour.
I think as well, and it sounds silly, but another angle as well with I think hurts the DP World Tour is the fact that if you are based in England or Europe or whatever, the time it's on is around Sunday afternoon when most people are demographic, you'd imagine. Let's be honest, it's typically males of a demographic of probably 30 to 60, let's just say, roughly. I don't know the exact, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's that. Going to be probably busy, maybe playing golf, maybe looking after children at kids' parties, whatever. Whereas the PGA Tour is on much, much later. It's perfect time for most people to actually sit down and watch some golf.
That's true.
So there's a lot of things and it's not in its favour.
I also think the big thing that I understand why they did it, I'm sure for money reasons, but the changing of the name.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's, yeah, it's fair.
I do think it was a real bold move to go from the European Tour, because it could have been the European Tour powered by DP World Tour. But to change the whole name of the tour, it does just seem like it's kind of like lost its way a little bit with that as well.
Speaking of tours, though, and exciting golfers, I'm hearing rumours of this YouTube Masters.
Rumours indeed.
And it's hotting up. And I know people listening and watching will be very interested to know on how far we're getting with this, what it looks like, and stuff. So elaborate. Well,
we're going to start our own tour, yes. The YouTube tour, where we're going to travel the world and play at exactly the right time for everybody to watch. And the money's going to be good enough for the creators, but not piss the audience off.
Yep.
You're going to get to watch it live for free on any device. You just pick up a device and it's on. It's on. You can watch it anytime you want. It's only on for an hour.
Yeah.
But it's 18 holes squeezed into an hour.
And an 82 normally wins, doesn't it?
82. So. So the YouTube, we are calling it the YouTube Masters at the moment, TBC.
Working title.
It is a golf event that is going to be taking place this year with some of the biggest names in golf YouTube playing.
And let's not give too many away right now, but you've spoken to some big names who are keen.
We've put the feelers out at the moment. We just need to get more confirmation. We need to get the back end right first, i.e. location, date, all those things, which we're finalising at the moment. Once we get those through, the likes of, we hope, to bring in Good, mm-hmm. Bob Does Sports. Mm-hmm.
That's it. So it's Rick, Good, and Bob Does Sports. Playing for an egg cup.
No, but all of your favourite YouTube creators, there's thousands of channels now.
Name three more then.
Buster Jacks.
Yeah, Buster Jack. No S on the end.
This fits rich.
No, it's funny. It's staying in. Gotta keep
I've got a list.
Okay, read it.
It's not on my phone.
Oh, Rick.
On my laptop. You throw some out there and I'll say if they're on the list.
Peter Finch.
Yes. And to be honest, though, I'm saying yes. I've not approached them just yet. They might say
yeah,
no.
Yeah, but the James Robinson.
Yes.
Gaz Golfs from Gaz Juddy Shaw.
Yes.
Alex Elliott.
Yes.
Mark Crossfield.
Yes. They're on this list.
Coach Lockie.
No.
Oh, found one. No. First, no.
They're on the list of people who...
They're invited. They will be invited. And it's up to them if they say yes or no.
Correct. This is the invite list. At
Paige Spranek.
Yes.
Grace Charis.
Yes.
What about some people that are known within the golf YouTube space that may not have an actual channel, i.e. your Inti Mehmets?
Yes.
Iona Stevens.
Yes.
Guy Charnock.
Yes.
Nice.
You're actually under the Rich Hills Golf Show invite.
That sounds a bit crusty at the end. A little bit.
Don't be daft. We're like the 20th biggest channel in the world.
Just on this channel.
On the subs channel. Wow. On the podcast channel.
Great. So it's exciting then.
Trying to think who else. There are other names in there, like Tubes and Ange.
Yeah. What about Tubes and Ange? Yeah. Big fans of those guys, doing some good stuff at the minute. So that'll be three of them though, because that was Jimmy Bullard.
They're all invited.
I actually sent Jimmy Bullard a DM the other day and he completely ignored me.
It might be the fact he sent a DM to me and I completely ignored him.
I just said, because he did a video with Ross Fisher, if you watched it.
It was really good.
And I messaged him and said, oh, really good video. And he just ignored me. Well, he's not ready, I don't know. And I spoke to Tubes as well. Tubes always gets back to me.
You said to Tubes, can you let Jimmy know?
I said he's ignored me. Plug in their channel. Don't watch Golf Life with Tubes and Ange and Jimmy Bullard, actually.
Just Tubes and Ange.
Yeah, forget Jimmy Bullard. Jimmy Bella. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. I do like Jimmy. No, we can keep it in, but blur that. And not blur it. Keep it in. It's fine. I like him, really.
It's in the pipelines at the moment. Once we've secured location and date, TBC very soon, invites will start to be going out.
Who would you be most upset if he couldn't make it? If Good said we've got a filming week, would you be gutted?
Grace Charis. I would probably be most upset if Fat Perez couldn't make it.
Fat Perez, he's really doing good things at the minute.
Just him. As long as he can make it, there's a tournament.
Yeah. And is it about the best player? This is what I'm not sure on the format. Is it about who's the best YouTube golf, or is it about a fun day, or is it a bit of both?
Well, it might be 2 days.
Okay.
And it's going to be looking like a golf tournament, mm-hmm. for a scratch winner.
Okay.
And a handicapped entry.
Wow.
But the scratch winner is the real winner.
So who's your money on for the scratch winner? What about Grant and Micah?
Yes,
they're not in
good,
but they're still coming.
Yeah, they're invited.
Great.
I'm not sure. I would imagine that someone like Micah might win it.
Yeah.
Luke Kwan. Imagine a Micah versus Luke final. I think whatever happens, I'd almost like to do it as like a playoff.
So even if
force a playoff,
someone's five shot wins by five. It's like, right, well done, mate. You shot a 65 to finish there. We've got to go in a playoff,
a one man playoff. Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be good. And then we are hoping, if we do a second day, having a Ryder Cup style event. So team UK and Europe versus USA.
You're selling me the sizzle. Can you produce the sausage?
it's growing arms and legs, okay. Like a lot of things at the moment. But yeah, it's logistical. Yeah. It's hard. It's not easy to do for the level we want to do it at. But stay tuned. It is.
So we started the podcast off by saying we spoke about the review channel too early. Let's hope we're not doing that with this.
No, this will happen this year.
Nice.
And then I feel like we're going off track here.
No, it's fine. This is good.
What else is coming up?
So the other thing I was going to ask you about is I'm a viewer of Rick Shields Golf, as you know. I'm a subscriber. Never leave a comment or like videos, but I subscribe. And I was watching your recent episode of Break 75, Southport and Ainsdale. You filmed with that young Guy Charnock character. I thought it was a decent episode.
Everyone said you looked ripped.
Yeah, a bit ripped, a bit fat, a bit of a...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mix at the minute.
You're bulking.
Bulking, yeah. It's a combination of eating too much and doing weights twice a week.
But it's like baby fat.
Baby fat a little bit.
Because you've had a baby.
Yeah.
Put a bit of fat when you have a baby.
Exactly. Need to, produce the milk somehow. that doesn't even make sense. But, so anyway, I was watching it. I was enjoying it. And I was watching this video thinking, wait a minute, I am influenced by Rick Shields, okay? And I went out and I bought a pair of Echo golf shoes because Rick Shields wears them. I'm now watching Break 75. It doesn't appear to my eye that Rick Shields is wearing Echo. What's going on?
Well, let me clear up those vicious rumours.
Okay.
Okay, before the lawyers start to come in.
Right.
Believe it or not, those wonderful golf shoes...
Yes.
That were comfortable.
Yes.
Stylish.
Very stylish.
Elegant.
Yes.
Are actually sexy.
Yeah, they were.
I actually feel like a better golfer wearing them.
Yeah.
I actually do.
Yeah.
They are the new Echo Classics.
No, so they are Echo?
They are 100%.
I knew they would be.
Echo. Wow. So, yeah, they are a new strand of shoe that's come out by Echo that are classic, stylish, sexy, comfortable, make you feel... When I put at the moment, okay,
yeah,
I feel like I'm stood more like Cam Smith.
Okay, because
kind of wears those white classic shoes.
And Tiger's back in a classic shoe as well.
So yeah, they're very, very nice, very comfortable, and I wouldn't walk across Scotland in them.
No, that's fair.
I think that I draw the line there.
Yeah,
but for 18 holes or even 36 holes playing golf in them, perfect.
If you had a black pair, would you wear them to a wedding if you've got your shoes and you had to wear them?
Mate, you could dance in those shoes.
Slide.
Well, they're not because they've got grip.
This is the question I've got, though, and I've heard you say this about them, and I trust you. I do, a bit. But are they actually comfy?
Yes.
Wow. That was, I believe that.
So comfy.
Wow.
They are, if you are looking for a classic shoe that looks fantastic and are comfortable and light and sexy, Echo Classic. Ding. Don't know why I needed to wake up.
You got a bit too sexy, Rick. Take the top off. Put your nipples away. So we've got some questions as well from our I'm trying to think of a good adjective, sound listeners and viewers.
Boss,
really, really good.
I do feel we're quite rusty with this podcast today.
Do you know? These are the best, trust me. These rust is what you want.
Okay,
a bit more spin. My pants are terrible today.
Hopefully you're all enjoying it.
Yeah. So do you not think it's good?
It just feels a bit rusty in parts.
What do you think, Sam? Yeah, so we've not got Matt on it today. We've got Sam behind the camera, and he said it's fantastic. So
okay,
that'll do for me. Our Facebook group members have asked some questions, Rick. So I'm going to give them to you.
Fire away.
So this one is from a guy. He must be Swedish because it's quite a... his name is Truls, I think you say it. He said, why do I hit my golf clubs straight and far on the range, but short and curved on the course? The word curved is what sold it to me.
I think hitting golf shots on a driving range is so different to the golf course. Like, it's actually ridiculously different, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of things. One, the mat, if you're hitting off mats, can really disguise a lot of bad strikes, can't they?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Like, you can hit, and it still bounces up.
You feel like you could be flushing it on a driving range and off a mat, and you unless you're really being quite, you know, strict with yourself and noticing where your strike is, you could fat every single shot.
Yeah.
Think you've had a good practice session, go to the golf course and not be able to hit it long further than 50 yards.
Just on that with flushing, I'm going to have to give huge kudos here to TaylorMade. Have you seen the half an hour long video of the TaylorMade guys in the range?
Is it good?
Have you seen it, Sam? It's insane.
I saw the Scottish Scheffler and Tiger little chit chat about divots.
Yeah. That's from it. So it's literally, it's a half an hour long video on the range when they go to the Stealth 2 first tryouts. It would have been filmed quite a while ago now. And there's Rory, there's Tommy, there's Colin, there's Scotty, and then there's Tiger.
They're normally filmed in like December.
Yeah, so it would have been a while ago. There's the five of them. And literally, they've got the tour bags laid out for them on the range, full of TaylorMade product, obviously with their grip on, their shaft, which loads of random heads, and even Rory a 6 hybrid, just anything they think they might have a little play with in their all their specs. And there's just cameras behind them just filming it for half an hour, and the chat they have between them. And what's so funny is, although it's a TaylorMade essentially an advert, really, the way that Tiger is quite dismissive of product, you can tell he just cuts through the BS. Like, he just knows it's Tiger Woods. He's not listening to your nonsense. But he has chats with the reps or whatever. And then he's hitting shots, yeah. And honestly, you know what? It's really, really good. So I just want to say kudos to TaylorMade for that, because, yeah, they like to push marketing stuff down your throat a lot. But that was really good content.
I saw the snippet of when Scotty was asking Tiger about taking divots. Yeah. Tiger did come across quite like, arrogantly, like, not asked.
He was in a bit of a strain. I think he was in real pain, because for that whole video, he was quite not himself. I mean, I haven't met him in real life, but you know when you see him when he's kind of being quite jokey and having a bit of, like with JT, and he's having a laugh. He wasn't like that. He was quite like serious in his eyes. It looked like he was in a bit of pain. Rory and Tommy were great. They were really good.
It seemed like they got on quite well then.
Yeah,
too.
You can tell they do. And then, to be fair, they've all got quite a good mix now, because Colin Morikawa's a bit more excited kid, and then Scotty Scheffler just almost can't believe he's there. He's just chilling. He's just loving it.
He doesn't seem like he should be there, does he?
He's just chilling watching Tiger. But yeah, it's really good. Anyway, that's a long-winded bit of nonsense that we didn't need to put in this question. Anyway, so that's that one. Why is that? Because it's just so different.
Yeah, I do honestly think, you know, I was at an event yesterday down at the Grove hitting some shots off grass, and like, practicing off grass, it really does show you where you're striking it. You just can't hide when you're hitting off grass. And I think it's, if you are at a driving range and you're pummeling loads of golf balls off a mat, you've just got to make sure that you're really strict where you strike, and also spend time hitting off the grass, because it makes such a big difference. I think the other thing with driving ranges, I think we're all quite clever at forgetting any real bad ones.
Correct.
On a driving range. Like, you'll stand there and you'll hit 100 balls and you remember the really good ones. I actually went to driving range this weekend, my kids, on Saturday, with two of them, because Pearl was at a party. And they hit 100 balls each.
Oh, my days.
Really, really quick. Okay. Power tees, it did fly through it. And they were using Top Tracer. They were using the Go Fish game on Top Tracer, which is really, really fun little game. I've not played it before. It's actually really cool. And when they're whacking shots, they are like, it's unbelievable. They just forget bad ones.
Yeah.
Like, properly forget them. And they can hit 5 shots or even just miss a few. And then if they just hit one good one, it's like, wow, look at that. Oh, my goodness. And you're like, I think as adults, at a driving range, we sometimes like that.
100%.
I think on a golf course, we're very different.
Well, also as well, naturally you will be, but your bad shot on the golf course will put you in a horrible shot for your next one. So if you thin a shot and it goes into the trees or whatever, your next shot, you're in the trees. So it's like more evident of what you've done to get to that situation, isn't it?
I really think we forget good shots on the course.
Good shots?
Yeah. I think we forget about them. Almost discard them to some degree. And only really highlight the bad
probably.
Ones. You know, unless you've hit an unbelievable shot. Yeah. But you generally focus on the bad ones, don't you?
I think as well, when you're on the range, another thing is, I do this a lot, you think you're hitting it well on the range because of strike. But actually, if you take a step back and look at the direction of the shot, it's not actually going that close. I'll be at the range, let's just say, and I'll hit a 4-iron and go, oh my, there's a crunch that. And you actually look at where it's gone and think, well, if that was actually going to a green. I would have missed the green.
Yeah.
On the golf course, that might put in a pot bunker. Yeah. I might not go up and
water
down.
Hazard.
Exactly. So yeah. It's like...
out of bounds,
the
even.
The best way of this, and this isn't just another plug for Top Tracer, but the Top Tracer 30,
yeah.
It's insane how difficult that is. You've got to hit 30 shots in order, and it gives you a handicap at the end of it. I'm sure you've done it yourself. And if you're not on, you see how much 10 yards right or 10 yards left can make a difference.
Yeah. You know what is mad, again, taking my kids and went to a Top Tracer range, is how quick they have adapted to almost technology on a range. Like, they'll hit a shot, they'll kind of watch it mid-flight, and then straight away they turn into the screen. But it really did make it fun for them. Like, they really enjoyed this kind of challenge of trying to get these fish and hit these sharks and all sorts. It was good.
You know what I was... So I, the weekend, you asked me at the start, I went to Centre Parks for the week, and there's actually a driving range at Centre Parks.
Yeah.
And I had a little wander at one afternoon, just thought I didn't take my clubs or anything, obviously. And I looked, and to be fair, actually, I was quite impressed. The mats were really good condition. Yeah. I thought they'd be knackered and old, but they weren't. And the range always looked okay. And there was one guy grinding, and they had a tailor-made cap on. He obviously brought all his gear. I thought, fair place, he's grinding. And there was a couple, well, there was a family. There was a man, and I guess it was his wife, who were maybe mid to late 40s, possibly early 50s, like a daughter, maybe mid-20s. And they were walking back down to the hut where they hired the clubs from. They had the old hired, battered drivers or whatever. And it sounds silly, but I thought, I wonder what, they're on holiday at Centre Park. It's quite an active holiday, admittedly. You might do a bit of whatever, swimming or whatever you might want to do. I wonder what it is about golf that's made them think we're going to go and hire a golf club and whack some golf balls. I think it is just that. It's whacking golf balls, isn't it?
Of course it is. And sorry, did you say that did one of them look like a golfer?
No, so there was a random guy on the range who was a golfer. He was nothing to do with this. There was a couple who were not golfers and the daughter who was like an adult as well. And they'd got a driver in hand each, steel shaft, battered head, obviously just hired it. One each, and I'm guessing they had a good time. They were walking back as I got there, so I didn't see them hit any balls. But they've obviously thought out of their day, oh yeah, let's go to the driving range, let's whack some golf balls. I was thinking to myself, like, sounds silly, but I wonder what it is that sparked that interest, if it's just the idea of just whacking a ball as hard as they can, or, like, why do people that aren't golfers end up going to the driving range? Because it's, if we knew the answer to that, that would maybe would help us get more people doing that.
Yeah, I wonder.
You know what I mean?
It's a really good question.
Like, why would a random man, his wife, on the holiday, go and hit balls? They could have gone in the swimming pool, they could have gone to do badminton, they could have gone on bikes, segways.
But then again, why would they go and do any of that
stuff? Well, exactly. But having said that, though, bar the one guy that was grinding and these couple that were walking away, there was nobody else on the range. So it's not very popular, but yet...
Yeah, I bet the mini golf was.
Yeah, rammed.
The mini golf there at Centre Parks is one really good, yeah. and it's always busy.
Yeah,
because I think people know what to expect from mini golf.
Yeah,
they kind of know. But did they expect? Would you know fully what to do if you went to a driving range?
I don't know. But I feel like if I went to driving range as a non-golfer, the one thing I'd want to do is just hit it as hard as I could.
Yeah,
with a big head.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's called. That big one, the big one. Where I hit it. Maybe isn't there a range round here? What's it called? Boomers and Swingers.
Yeah.
And that's very much about whacking. Yeah. You have like a tank on the range. It's literally going to whack balls. And I quite like that. I love Top Tracer ranges, don't get me wrong. I love quite serious golfers' ranges. But I love this idea. And I'll tell you what, I went to Trafford Golf Centre, not this weekend, the one before, I think on a Sunday, whatever it was, at a certain time. Nobody there is a golfer.
You know what I think driving ranges like that should do? Or there should be an equipment firm that does this. Create big whacker clubs.
Yeah, big 1,000cc drivers.
Yeah, that's got lots of loft, but the length of like an 8-iron or a 7-iron. Because often when you see golfers go to a driving range, it's hard because of the length of the club.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
45 inches or so.
And they've got a driver head that's a bit battered. But if you add, forget the rules of it needing to be 460cc, make it 550 for argument's sake, stick 16 degrees of loft on it, so it still whacks it, you still get the big
bright
whacker colours head,
maybe, just to, why
but
not?
You get a shaft length that's like a 6-iron maybe.
That's quite a good idea.
And it's just like any hit.
Just bounces.
Yeah, it just bounces off the loft and goes up in the air.
Call it the bulldozer.
Yeah. And even, the other thing, have a grip that almost puts your hands somewhat in the right position. I know there's been training grips that have done that before.
On.
But just a dead easy way of just going, make sure your thumbs are there, do that bit, and then just whack it.
Mm. Well, that's a good idea. Let's make one.
I'm going to trademark that.
The bulldozer.
Big whackers.
The big whacker. Okay, Rick's, another question.
Rick's big whacker.
It's not that big. I wouldn't know. Andrew Morgan has said, instead of rolling the golf ball back, Why not limit the pros to 10 clubs in their bag for tournaments? Would we see more shot makers win tournaments?
I think there's so many more ways they could limit professional golf than rolling the ball back.
Mm-hmm.
I, the more I think about it, I think I hate it. I hate so much of it. I think driver shaft lengths could be it. I think loft limits could be it. Because then it still doesn't feel that different.
I'm not sure on the length of shaft. I just think that does punish taller players.
Yeah, true. But I think like loft limits I feel like
less clubs would be a good one.
Less clubs would be a really good one.
What would your 10 clubs be? So basically taking four out. What four clubs would you take out the bag?
We'd have to come up with a different loft setup. I mean, I'd almost just take out like a 9-iron, a sand wedge and a lob wedge.
Take them out?
Yeah.
So what would you have as a wedge then?
So like you still have your gap wedge,
yeah,
and your sand wedge, and a pitch.
Oh, I'm with you.
So you're the kind of alternate clubs.
Take out lob wedge. That's one.
So lob wedge, gap wedge, 9-iron.
That's only three. You got to take one
four
more.
4-iron or 2-iron or 5-wood or 3-wood.
Yeah. That'd be quite good though. It would more be creativity. Really good. Or if you even just had the most lofted club, that'd be 56. Things like that. There's other ways, I guess. But
do you think there should be a tour event with only four clubs?
I love it.
I tell you what, I think there should be a tour event. As soon as you lose a ball, you're out.
Like, and it would still be lower score wins, though, obviously. Yeah.
But as soon as you lose your golf ball,
you could be on the last six under, and I'm two under, so you're going to win, but you win the water,
yeah,
and I just par it, so I win. Yeah, that'd be quite good. Is this what Liv should do more of, do you think? Or does it get a bit too gimmicky?
I actually just feel like it's too samey every event at the moment.
That's what I'm saying. Should the tours do more stuff like this?
Yeah. I really, I feel like there should be tournaments where, I know they do the Zurich Classic. Is it Zurich Classic where it's pairs, alternate shots?
I can't remember.
I'd love a tournament where you're in a pair, okay? Mm-hmm. And day one, I hit all the full shots, you put.
Mm-hmm.
Day two, you hit all the full shots, I put.
Yeah.
Like, you could even do 36 holes in a day. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there should be more styles of events. But then does it take away? I don't know.
It's the only thing it takes away is the credibility of, like, Jason Day's win this weekend. He was the best golfer on the planet, arguably.
He's not the best golfer that didn't lose a ball.
Correct.
Or he's not the best golfer with four clubs.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, it's a good question. A quick one for you from Jamie Holland. Where is the best Guinness Rick has ever tasted? You're a guy who likes Guinness. Have you ever had a pint and thought, that's better than the rest?
Yeah.
Where?
Dublin.
Done. Standard answer, really, isn't it?
Yeah, the home of Guinness.
Stephen Noble, and this is the one I'm picking up because I think there's actually some merit in this. First things first, did you see my Instagram story the other day of my ball speed?
No.
You not see it? Do you see it, Sam? 169.
Sheesh.
That's at Trafford, not stupid swings. Okay. Just so you're aware of that.
On the record.
Yeah, Stephen Noble said, is Guy still 12 yards longer off the tee than Rick, or has that changed?
I actually feel like you are.
I was going to say this. Before this last trip,
I know.
I've gained a bit, haven't I? A sneaky little bit.
I know.
I can see it in your eyes. You know.
I felt like that 12 yards was a bit of a running joke.
Yeah.
One time at Formby Hall and all this jazz, right? And I wouldn't then say for a long period of time, I kind of brushed whatever. More recently, there's been times where I've gone, I can't hit a driver better.
Yeah. Keep talking.
And yes, you've hit it 10 to 12 yards longer.
Yeah. Opening my hips up more.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. On the way back, still not doing it correct enough. But opening my right hip up more, I feel like I am. And it's, honest to God, my ball speed is like 168 at Trafford every shot.
Yeah.
So I must be in a little bit, still massively early extending, but a little bit more rotation.
Should I focus a lot more on distance?
Well, if you're happy with me being 12 yards longer, if you can see it.
I need to focus more on distance.
You're chipping sorted. Let's get you on talk this right.
The problem is at the moment, and you'll see this from videos that are coming up, golf is a weird game.
Yes.
Where it's a lot of spinning plates.
You've
got to spin your putting plate.
Yeah.
Spin your chipping, your pitching, your irons, your driver, your sand saves, your mental game.
Yes.
All these, right?
Yes.
And when you focus on just one, they all fall down.
Correct.
And they all bloody smash on the floor and you've got to go and buy a new plate to spin it again.
Yeah, I agree. And I've had exactly that recently. Driving was great, putting went off, vice versa. I think that's again the addiction. There'll never be a day where everything goes right. Surely there won't be. Maybe there'll be one in your golfing life, but I can't see it.
I can't.
I'd love to have the perfect day.
Any ability to, regardless, we could shoot the best score that we are capable of shooting. 100%, you'll still look back at it and go, I could have done better.
Yeah.
Couldn't you?
Yeah, 100%.
Unless you are literally shooting a 59, which we are not capable of doing.
No.
You'll always look back at it and go, I could, oh, that, remember that little 6 footer I missed coming down the hill, that slippery one where I just underread it?
Yeah, it's, I'm getting close to having a round of golf where, for me, everything goes well, but then there's always something in there. And even then, there'll be a mental block. I'll get to a hole and think, oh, I'm playing one level par through 16 holes, big smash out of bounds.
See ya.
Yeah, I'm not that guy. I can't do it. This is a good question, actually. And I've got a little take on this. From Luke Jones, and he's put, thoughts on the cost of a Titleist fitting at one of their centres. So, ironically, we're just being Woburn, is the home of Titleist's Performance Institute, whatever you want to call it, the top, as far as I know, fitting centre in the UK. And I believe it's £500 for a fitting. Mm. And that doesn't come off the clubs. So you're paying £500. And then if you buy a set of irons, you add the £500 onto that.
And from what I understand, they're full.
Yes.
Like,
you know, you can't book in. This might go against the grain. I'm completely in favour of it.
I think I've said it on the podcast before. I'm in favour of paying for a fitting.
Yeah.
I believe you should pay for a fitting.
Yeah.
And the fitter then provides you with the best fitting information they can. Mm-hmm. And that would go as far as even saying your clubs that you've currently got are perfect for you because you've paid for your fitting.
Yeah.
So the fitter's got what he needs out of it. He's making money from that fitting, which is fine because it's a service. If they sell clubs on top of that, great. But no, that driver, I'm going to tweet the loft. I can't be that driver. That's the best driver for you.
Mm-hmm. But would you think it should come off the price?
No. If you pay for a fitting,
yeah,
and I would love to see almost. I'd love to see fitting centres where you almost couldn't buy golf equipment.
So
it's almost like you go in, okay, and you get fitted for what is going to suit you, mm-hmm. okay, and from that fitting you get the information that you need. So this is the length you're gonna need. This is the grip thickness. This is the lie angle. This is the weight that we believe is going to be perfect for you. Within your budget, these are the recommendations that you should look for. Mm-hmm. And then off you go.
Yeah.
And then go and buy them for wherever you want. You've got the information, but they might from that whole almost prescription, that diagnosis of your golf swing might go, well, actually, one of the recommendations of drivers we've got is actually the one you've already got in your bag.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I think that, I think Luke's point on this, and I'm guessing he's kind of somewhat against it. I don't know if he is or not, but it feels like by even asking the question he is, which is fair enough. I think sometimes as golfers, we see it a lot anyway, or I feel like we see it a lot, certainly as questions or people's opinions about price of things. But that's like any walk of life. You know, if you're walking around in anything other than a Tesco trainer that costs £10, you're paying too much, you could argue, couldn't you? Because a Tesco trainer at £10, you can walk in and get around from A to B. You know, if you're driving anything old, better than a £400 or £500 car that you got secondhand, you're paying more. Do you know what I mean? There's always, every walk of life, and what it is, you can start to pay more. And that might be for exclusivity. It might be for materials. It might be for almost clout. So, you know, a Rolex at £100,000 doesn't tell the time, but in the £10 Casio, you're wearing that £100,000 Rolex for other reasons, aren't you? And it's like with golf and fitting. You know, you can go into your local golf store, American Golf or wherever, and get fitted for free on Titleist product. That's just part of it. And no disrespect to those places, but the level of fitting will be a certain level. If you go to Titleist Fitting Centre at Woburn or wherever, or any brand of fitting centre, not just Titleist, we have to pay for it. You're getting access to the absolute best-in-class fitters who know that product better than anybody else on the planet. You're hitting the best golf balls off grass. The experience from getting there and, you know, the service you would, I imagine, never been fitted there properly, but imagine the service you will get is best-in-class. So you're not paying for a fitting as such. You're paying for that elevated experience.
It'd be a bit like if you, I'll use Jaguar, for argument's sake at the moment, just because I can relate it easier. If you've got a Jaguar and need it fixing, and you could take that Jaguar to get it fixed at Quick Fix, mm-hmm. couldn't you?
Yeah.
New tyres, bit of a fill-up of oil, and you go in to get a level of service for a level of price.
Yeah.
If you had the opportunity to be able to take your Jaguar to the Jaguar F1 team, mm-hmm. and straight away they can fix it, put the tires on within not only the highest possible specs you can possibly get in the quickest time by the most qualified people on the planet to do that.
Yeah.
You got to pay for that service. Mm-hmm. And that's similar to these tightless irons. You're not, at the end of it, your irons will still be somewhat the same, but you've had that absolutely first in class, best experience you can possibly
have. Well, that's it as well. And I think sometimes it annoys me because, you know, golf is our sport and I feel like it's part of me and I'm part of it or whatever. And we all do, we work in golf or play golf. When people then get carried away this narrative that golf is too expensive because of things like this, where to get fit for irons is £500. That's one of many, many aspects of golf. You don't have to spend that. You know, I don't have to drive a McLaren. Obviously, I don't drive a McLaren, but people...
you have two.
Yeah, people do. You know, you can get to work and back in a, like I said, a £400 car. That might not be quite as desirable, but still does the job. But same with golf, you know. I like that these options out there because there's some people who will go and spend £500 on alligator leather head covers, for example, because they want to. Doesn't mean that golf's expensive, does it?
No.
So I think it's just something to clear up that if you want that fitting, I'm sure it's great, but it's, yeah, anyway. And the last one is from Chris Gerling, and he says, what's Rick's best ever round of golf? He said, not necessarily your best score. I'm going to throw a caveat in here. You can't say Augusta. you can't.
Like the best round... Well, score-wise.
I think you can go either way. I think you can go... He said not score, so you could see... So you could have a round where you were 5-under, got to last and shot a 9. So it wasn't your best round because of that. But up to there, it was the best golf you've ever played. Or it could just be the best round that you've maybe enjoyed the most or that you've remembered the most or however you want to interpret it.
There was definitely a spell... Was it you that I was showing the other day or someone else where when I was... Many, many years ago when I was doing the quest for the Open, mm-hmm. and I found I was practicing a lot, playing a lot of tournaments, in just local tournaments, I definitely found that I got into somewhat of a groove. It wasn't exceptionally amazing, but I actually felt quite confident shooting on the par. And actually, when you look at my PJ record in that kind of time period, I shot some 4-unders, 3-unders, 2-unders, quite a lot. It's like I shot 4-under at Conway Golf Club.
Wow.
Had 2 eagles and just came second to Phil Archer.
Wow.
If I don't remember that round that well. I remember playing well and I remember my 2 eagles that I got. But it was like, I wouldn't say that was my standout round of golf. It wasn't the most enjoyable, but it was probably the most control I had over my golf ball ever.
That's a nice feeling though.
Yeah. And certainly, you know, Conway, it's a very, very, very difficult end finishing to the round. And I was 4-under maybe through 15, I think. And I was thinking, I'm not going to hold on to this. There's no way. And I did. I felt like I really could control my ball flight and got through some very difficult holes to finish 4-under par. So I think that definitely, from a ball control, I think there's times where I've played quite literally with mates where I went to... me and a few mates went to JCB Golf Club a couple of summers ago and it was beautiful weather. Some pals I've not seen for a long time. We had beers. Nice round of golf. We were staying there for the full weekend. It just felt super, super chilled and relaxed. I really enjoyed the round I played with Iona at Crail.
Yes, that was a special day.
I thought it was really, really good. And more recently, I've actually been really, really enjoying the rounds that you and me have been having with the Scramble.
Mm. Yeah.
The Break 65s. So we did one at JCB.
Yeah.
That was really like, because it's a very positive round of golf, isn't it?
I think I like it because it's a team element. We're playing as a team. If I miss a putt and it's you, I want you to hold it, which is different. I mean, I never want you to miss putts, but when you feel part of a team, but you still got that kind of individual element that, like, if you hit a good shot, it's on you, or like if you hit a bad one the night, a good one or whatever, you feel like you've saved the team. It's a nice
I really do like scrambles. We did one recently, which is going to be coming out in a few weeks, at Woburn. Funny, we've just been talking about titles there at Woburn, but we did one at Woburn, and when I've even watched scrambles on YouTube, I know lads from Good do it, and Bob does, they've got nice feels to them, haven't they?
Well, they have, and also we'd be a little bit hypocritical to be saying about the PJ Tour being the same every week if all of your videos every week were dead serious stroke play. Yeah. It's nice to have that mix, isn't it?
Yeah, so there's a few there. There's kind of like rounds where I felt like I had real control of the golf ball, and it felt like, you know, it was I was the practice and the hard work was starting to pay off. There's rounds that are just iconic at Crail with Iona, where it was just like everything just seemed to be going well, and the golf was good, and she was great. Her golf was good. My golf was good. It worked out as a great video. And then, like I say, more recently, kind of our break 65s, where it feels like there's that team element. And that's why I used to love doubles match play.
Yeah, me too.
For that. Because it feels like you're part of a team, and it's like, come on, like, let's... Because golf is so individual so much of the time, isn't it? You never really have that team element to it.
What's mad is, it doesn't have to be, does it? It doesn't have to. Think about it by its nature. Yeah, you're hitting a golf shot. But we've just created formats where typically most time you play on your own, but there could be so much. I know college golf is very much a team game. That you play on your own, yeah, but your scores all count, whatever, or the best four of six, whatever, count. But like, there could actually be so many elements, like you said, where you have, let's say, alternate shot, or you play a hole, then I play the next hole, player three plays the next hole, and it all counts to one score. Yeah.
I think there's probably the only other one, which oddly as well is kind of a team, when I played Sawgrass with Nick the caddy.
Yeah.
Because that, again, felt like a team. Yeah,
exactly.
We had beautiful weather. The golf course was spectacular. I played nicely. And it felt like he was part of the team. Mm. Like, it felt nice that, like, it's not just all on you all the time.
I get it.
So, yeah, there's a couple little standout ones. And an Augusta National, when I played Augusta National, yeah. thanks for listening, everybody. It's a bit of a random one today.
Fine, that. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Hopefully everyone enjoys it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about today's episode.
Okay. How can I reach...
If I'm going to rank it...
Yeah.
From personally, it's struggling to get 5 stars.
Wow.
Today.
I thought it was about 10. 5 stars.
Five stars.
I'll deal with that.
It's a 3.5. Could do better.
Okay, wow. I'd go 4.
But it's not me rating it. It's you guys. If you've not rated the podcast yet, be sure to rate it. Only rate it 5 stars. thanks for listening, everybody. Loads of content coming soon. Do not worry. Nothing's happened. Just lots of things have happened.
Just remind me one more time, what brand are your new shoes? Oh, I got that on the table as well.
Echo, these are a bit dirty. Yeah, no. Echo. I rode my bike in them this weekend, which is a mistake. Well, in my golf shoes.
You're always wearing Echo.
Thanks. I am. Quite literally. Right, guys, thanks everyone. Stay tuned, lots more to come, and we'll see you next.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.